KDBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Two more former Proud Boy extremist group members sentenced for their parts in the January 6th attacks. Ethan Ordean getting 18 years, and says ABC's Martha Raddatz.
Former Proud Boys member Dominic Pozzola, who was captured on video smashing a window in the Capitol with a stolen police riot shield on January 6th, sentenced to 10 years in prison. Prosecutors had asked for an even stiffer sentence, calling Pozzola a poster boy for the conspiracy.
A not guilty plea by Rudy Giuliani today to Georgia charges that accuse him of trying, along with former President Trump and others, to illegally overturn the 2020 election results in that state. For tens of millions today, student loan interest begins accruing for the first time in 3 years. It's happening for Ashley Robinson.
I genuinely cannot afford a big student loan payment. I don't know where that's going to come from.
This is ABC News. Labor Day holiday travel.
At busy O'Hare International Airport, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says Chicago isn't the only city experiencing unprecedented passenger traffic.
This weekend is capping what TSA reports is the busiest summer travel period on record. The most air travel passengers that have been screened by TSA in American history.
And cancellations are down.
Not only are we seeing the system rebound from the worst effects of COVID, but we're seeing things come more in line with what we would have regarded as normal.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he will visit Maui tomorrow to see areas impacted by the wildfires. He's leading a bipartisan delegation. Meanwhile, today, a day of remembrance, prayer, and reflection for the 115 people who died. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expected to head to New York later this month for the UN General Assembly. Andy Field, ABC News.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. Hot weather is back just in time for your weekend, Northeast Wisconsin. Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot has more.
Near record-breaking heat is headed back into Wisconsin this Labor Day weekend. Highs will climb to the upper 90s to low 100s once again. Paired with oppressive sticky humidity, heat advisories and warnings may be issued Sunday into Monday. As you enjoy the great outdoors with family and friends, remember to stay hydrated. Have a shaded or air-conditioned spot nearby to cool down in. And as hard as it may be, avoid sugary and alcoholic beverages, as this only increases your risk for heat illnesses.
Looking for some entertainment this Labor Day weekend? There is lots of Labortainment happening in Northeast Wisconsin. For family fun, check out the Labor Day Parade in Nina Menasha Monday the 5th at 10 a.m. And for you Hepcats, check out Jazz Fest Menasha Saturday and Sunday. Have a safe holiday weekend, Northeast Wisconsin. Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Working hard is a long-standing tradition in Wisconsin. Some of the first labor unions formed here because of it. This Labor Day, join Earl Ingram as he hosts a special The Earl Ingram Show live from 8 to 11 a.m. at Labor Fest in Milwaukee.
Many people don't work on Labor Day, and so all they know is it's a day off. As a person who spent 34 years in labor and was a union man, I know the value of that.
Earl and his guests will discuss how Wisconsin's labor related legislation became a model for other states, along with what unions look like now.
I've seen us go from that 30% union membership to now in Wisconsin, somewhere around 12%.
A union-led parade meets up with festgoers on the Summerfest grounds at 11. Labor Fest is free and open to all. Join Earl Ingram live this Labor Day, Monday, September 4th, starting at 8 a.m. from Labor Fest in Milwaukee, only here on your local Civic Media radio station and the Civic Media app. We're in the Civic Media Truth Booth at the Brown County Fair. We asked, and here's what you are telling us about living in the Green Bay area, attending the fair, and more.
Novely Phelps. I work at the fair at Sheridan Amusements. I work with the kiddie rides. I set up, tear down, wash them, and run them, make little kids happy. I run the raceway. I set it up, tear it down. I help with other kiddie rides. I love to put a smile on kids' faces.
Thanks for sharing your story. Listen for more on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, and the Civic Media app. And our website, civicmedia.us, and search for Truth Booth. And watch for the Civic Media Truth Booth coming to your town soon.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
All electric buses in nearly 200 cities to cut local air pollution and emissions, and officials say they're cheaper to operate. And finally, in Ecuador, in a historic national referendum, Ecuadorians voted overwhelmingly to ban oil drilling in Yasuni National Park in the Amazon rainforest, one of the most diverse biospheres in the world. It's hailed as a historic example of climate democracy, and it was also a victory for indigenous peoples and conservationists.
I will share that hailing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Job numbers, pretty good job numbers. 187,000 jobs created in the month of August. That is up from the 170 that was expected. Unemployment rose 3.8%. You go, oh, sky falling. No. 750,000 people back into the workforce. People coming out looking for jobs. Good thing. Labor participation back up to where it was pre-pandemic levels. We're moving in the right direction, folks. Things are going well. Still a lot of work to do. Lots of work to do. But heading in the right direction. And this, much to the chagrin of the folks on the extreme right who have been, you know, pining for recession, have been pining for chaos, for more pain and suffering for working people. And I got to tell you, the reality of this administration has been doing just about everything I could have asked them to do on the employment front. They're literally killing it. And this is one of those moments where you go, give them credit where credit is due. Today, for instance, another thing that I think is important. They've come forth and said that we need to have better regulation in our nursing care facilities. They are going to set up the first nationwide minimum standards situation for nursing homes across the country. Because I was reading this editorial at the USA Today. They said, over the first 90 days of this year, only 141 of the nation's nearly 15,000 skilled nursing facilities met the minimum requirement for registered nurses and certified aid standards. Just 141 out of 15,000. Now, what we've allowed to happen to our health, our nursing home system is, in my view, mostly criminal. We've privatized most of it. Most of the county homes that we used to have, that we used to run, we've hocked off for pennies. And,
You get these people who come in and how can I make money off of it? And how they make money off of it, they cut standards. They cut staff. They cut corners. They cut care. They smash as many people as they can into these facilities. I got to tell you, it's time that we start putting some of these minimum standards in place. And I'm glad that the administration has done it. Now, as I've been saying, look, I think the administration's been killing it. The things that they've been coming out with, just fantastic on the labor front. You know, we've talked about, you know, speeding up union elections. We've talked about the NLRB and the stuff that they've done. We talked about the overtime threshold that they've asked to move up. Lots of things moving and pointing and driving us in a good strong direction. And I think I've been saying that. And giving this administration as much credit as they've earned. I'm not a hero worship person. And I think Democrats had better stop with the hero worship. Biden's doing his job, and he's doing a darn good job of it. And you give him credit when they do a good job. But you also got to hold them accountable when they don't. And thus far, the Biden administration is doing a good job, worthy of adulation, worthy of respect, worthy of praise. And they get that. And the reason I bring this up is yesterday I started the segment off with a headline about Biden not taking evidently Biden's now taking smaller steps to get into Air Force One. And this has been a theme of the media for a very long time. And I said, look, why not just write the stories that Joe Biden's old? And immediately my email is full of people who are, you're attacking him. No, I am not attacking Joe Biden. I'm simply saying what is true. Joe's old. Joe struggles with speaking. That doesn't mean his policies are bad. It doesn't mean I'm not going to vote for him. I'm voting for the policies. But you know, I got all this stuff. You know, you're part of the circular firing squad. You're stabbing him in the back, ankle biters. You name it. I got every attack that you could come up with. And I'm a couple of the people. I said, did you hear what I said? Were you listening? It was an indictment of our media structure for really pushing this narrative that you know, Biden can't do the job. I think he can. And I think he's doing a darn good job of it, surrounding himself with, oddly enough, the very best people who are doing a very good job, especially at the NLRB and the Department of Labor. Now, that said, I find it interesting that we can't talk about the fact that, you know, he's got some issues come election time. The fact that we can't talk about that without everyone getting all bunched up tells me we got problems. And as I've said, I think he's doing a fantastic job. I'll put his policies against what the Republicans have come out with. I'll put up the job creation. I'll put up the labor standards. I'll put up, you know, the especially this most recent stuff. I'll put all this up: the infrastructure bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, the investments in climate stuff. I'll put all that up on the table against anything the Republicans have, because they've got nothing. And the reason I say they've got nothing is in Michigan. And this is another thing, Democrats doing the work that they should be doing, not hero worship, just doing their jobs, doing what we've sent them into office to do and demanding that they do. Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, has a proposal to pay folks paid leave, paid family leave. So if you have, you know, a birth of a child, you have a sickness, you need to take care of a loved one who's sick, you get a little paid time off to help deal with life's problems. Whatever it is, you're sick, a kid's sick, you, whatever. Republicans in Michigan are messaging around the idea that this proposal is just it's just summer break for adults. And you go, no, anybody who's had to take care of a loved one, and I've had to take care of sick family members, anyone who's been sick themselves, been there myself,
sick kids, whatever. You need that time. That is a family value. That is a working class issue. Something most certainly working people should be behind. But the Republicans see it as, it's just summer break for adults. It tells you what they think of working people. It tells you what they think of us. I mean, they're honest. Give them credit. They're at least honest. Fact of the matter is, they're doing everything they can do to interject themselves into our lives while telling us that they want freedom. And I look at Texas, for instance. There are a number of towns in Texas who are on the abortion front. They're going to start this. It's mind-blowing, but it was predictable. And we had talked about this right when Roe was overturned. All of the ways that Republicans were going to put themselves in the middle of your life and inconvenience you just because you might be getting an abortion. And there have been towns in Texas that have passed ordinances that are going to stop you on the highway. You could be going on a highway somewhere to an airport or a train station. So it's even beyond papers, please. It's a pregnancy test, please. You might not be able to leave the state until you take a pregnancy test. So when I look at the reality of where we are, the policies that are being put forth, because again, understand, I am not a hero worship person. I didn't have all that much faith in Robert Mueller because that didn't happen. Merrick Garland is not a savior. Obama wasn't a savior. I liked Obama. I liked his policies on a certain front. He left a lot on the table. There was a lot that could have been done, should have been done, I wish would have been done. But I never bought to the hero worship. And I'm not going to do that for Joe Biden. This is the kind of stuff that drives me crazy. We can criticize our elected leaders when they're wrong. We give them praise when they do what they're supposed to. This isn't that hard to figure out. So for all the people who sent me emails, I appreciate the thoughts. I do. I get you're defensive. But this is one of those things that gets us attacked quite often. Be honest about the situation. Biden's not a great public speaker. But you know what he is? He's a great policy guy. The stuff that he's putting forth, the stuff they're dropping out, killing it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, the administration announced $15.5 billion in investment. That's going to help transition our auto manufacturing into electric vehicle factories, moving those jobs from one to the other. This is important stuff, but it's good policy. That, to me, is what... this is what we should be doing, without question. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Kurt in Akron on line one. Kurt, how are you?
Hey, good evening and happy Labor Day to you, Rick. You deserve it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And, hey, another one that was a couple weeks ago that a lot of people probably don't know is Mingo County, West Virginia. The Biden administration made it possible for alternative energy source factories to be made to replace the coal mines that have been devastated down there for decades.
Yeah. No, I mean, the amount of investment that's going into areas that hate him is truly impressive. And for him, it's not about, did you vote for me? Or it's about doing what's in the best interest of the country. And I give him credit
right,
for that.
It's about what's doing right for the people who need it the most is what it comes down to. But, you know, I was listening to my archives today, and I was listening to FDR, and he said something, and it can kind of apply to Biden, President Biden, I think. And that is, President Roosevelt said that between 1913 and 1921, he was close enough to world affairs that he learned Between 1913 and 1921, he was close enough to world affairs to learn what to do, but more importantly, he learned what not to do. And what I'm getting at is Joe Biden, what you're talking about with his policy record and everything, take the Senate stuff aside, but just the fact that between 2009 and 2017, he was close enough to world affairs that he learned what to do, but again, more importantly, what not to do when it comes to how he governed.
Yeah.
So we're actually in a good position in the sense that he was a vice president for 8 years, and he was the last person to always leave the room after a policy meeting with Barack Obama. So what I'm getting at is he had a lot of not really on-the-job training, but he had a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Exposure. He's seen a lot of stuff.
He's seen a lot of stuff to the point where he stutters and he comes off as, I don't want to say an idiot to some people, but the fact that he stutters and he can't get it out, like you said, he's not the greatest speaker in the world. He's not a stupid man. That's what people don't get. I've heard people call him Geriatric Joe and some derogatory statements beyond that. But my question to the age thing, too, is if Joe Biden's going to be 81 and you were railing, not you, but people who voted against him were railing against him for being 78, why are you not making a big deal about Donald Trump being 78?
Shh. You're not allowed to say that.
Oh, I'm not?
No. Shh. You're
pointing
out the hypocrisy,
right?
And you can't do that.
Oh, no. Oh, also, another thing I heard today. Remember when President Reagan said, it's morning in America again, back in 1984?
Yeah.
You remember what the statistics were for that morning in America?
Well, we had high unemployment and high inflation, as I remember it, because I lived through it.
We had 4% inflation and 7% unemployment. Joe Biden should be winning 49 out of 50 states, maybe losing Wyoming, which is the most conservative state in the country next year, given the record of what he's got versus what Ronald Reagan had 40 years ago.
Yep.
Just saying, people, history, just, you know, but, you know, Ron DeSantis and all those guys don't want you to know about that.
There you go. Good stuff, Kurt. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
No, I mean, Kurt's spot on. I mean, the reality is if you use the same metrics, you know, as I said, Biden's killing it. The difference is, and I talked about this yesterday a bit, Biden's had a ton of accomplishments, just not doing a great job, you know, getting it out there, letting people know, hey, look what I've done. And this is where I said from the beginning, there should be 20-foot statues all over the place of that stupid thing that they were putting on gas pumps. You know, Biden did that. Going, yeah, look, Biden did that. Job numbers, unemployment's good. The economy's moving in the right direction. We got all of these policy things that are happening, all this infrastructure, all this manufacturing. Yeah, did that. Take credit for it. Blow your own horn. Let's go to line two. We got Alice on line two. Alice, how are you today?
Insane as usual.
What's on your mind?
I knew what you meant last night. I did catch the beginning of the show, and then I was on a cat rescue mission, which fell through, but I knew what you meant.
All right, that's all I did. Because I got to tell you, you know, I got so much response that I'm like, did I explain myself wrong? What was I off? And I actually went back and listened to it again, and I'm going, no, I said what I wanted to say. You know, the media's beating up on poor Joe. Just write the story. Say he's old. Get past it, and let's talk about the work that he's actually doing.
Yeah, apparently some people weren't paying close attention to what you said. They just caught at the end. And the other thing I wanted to comment on was I did read that story in the Washington Post about the town passing the ordinances, and I was like, what the hell are they doing? Is this not against, like, federal law? Isn't there something in there about moving freely from state to state, and moving on the highways easily and whatnot? Am I just dreaming this?
Well, state to state you can go through, but town to town, that's a whole other story. They're trying to get you. They're trying to stop you on every road. They're going to shut down any underground railroad before you even get on the train.
Oh, I know. And then they quoted the one council member saying she was a Jesus lover. I thought, you know what? I am so tired of you people and your Jesus lovers and all this. And I'm a good God fearing Christian, and they're the worst people on the planet. It's just ridiculous. And happy Labor Day.
Thanks, Alice. No, look, the reality is I want her to be a Jesus lover. I do. I actually do. Because he believed in feeding people and clothing people and all of those things that they don't want to do. If you're such a hyper-Christian, hyper-religious, and not even Christian, if you're hyper-religious, you know, shouldn't that be where you're going? Instead of forcing people to have children that they can't afford, maybe figure out how to help them? Instead of this kind of stuff, it's very conservative. Bring on the Christian Sharia law. I had someone yell at me for that as well. The Christians don't want Sharia law. You go, yeah, have you noticed? They want to plaster their rules all over the place that they don't remember. I mean, that's the amazing part. And I always think about the one pastor I had on the show. It's got to be, it was back during the Obama years. James David Manning was his name. He came on the show because he was calling, Barack Obama homosexual and all kinds of stuff. Very, very Christian, And I asked him about those 10 rules, especially the one about bearing false witness, since, he was making some pretty, fantastical claims that I don't know how he could prove other than, he believed. And I love that about my believer friends. But he was hell-bent on, we got to plaster those rules all over the place and force people into obeying them. And when I asked him, can you tell me what those rules are? He didn't know. He told me he would read it to me out of the book. And I said, no, I want them in your own words. And not in any particular order. Start in the middle, work yourself at the top, And he wouldn't. He absolutely wouldn't. And this is my problem with that crowd. They want to impose their things on everyone else, but not quite so much for themselves. And that's my problem in all of this. I know the wealthy are going to get whatever they want, whatever health care, whatever reproductive care, whatever they want, they get. It's the poor and the working class that get screwed. We've seen this over and over again. This is not new. There's nothing new here. You look at history, this is what it is. And I go back to what Kurt said a second ago. They're beating up on Biden, for being Sleepy Joe and, Geriatric Joe. But somehow, he's this super mastermind who's doing all of this stuff, secretly against Trump. He's masterminding all of the indictments. He's at masterminding, just this genius. But he's doing it while he's sleeping, which is twisted. I don't know how you can juggle. I don't know how you keep both those thoughts at the same time and then justify it. I just don't. But it is what it is. Another story, another quick bit before we take a break here. Evidently, U.S. oil production has risen to almost 13 million barrels a day. It's the highest since February of 2020. What's important about that is that's before the pandemic. Now, as I've said for a long time, Joe Biden, you killed the Keystone Pipeline. Nope, Joe Biden didn't do anything to the Keystone Pipeline. Keystone Pipeline is working just fine, thank you very much. And it's doing everything it was built to do, and it's doing it the way it's supposed to. It's the XL pipeline, the Keystone XL that was killed. That was never going to help us. It was never going to come here. It was never going to do anything for our needs. But this story that we're now back to pre-pandemic output is interesting in that finally the oil companies are ramping up production. You know, I've said for a very long time, we're getting screwed at the pump, not because of Biden, but because of corporate America, because of the collusion, because of the not wanting to produce more. Because, hey, they were happy. If you listen to the earnings call, they were thrilled where the production was and the price of oil was, because they're raking in massive profits. They don't care about you or your family. And then the easy scapegoat was, well, look what Joe Biden did. He killed the Keystone XL pipeline, which was never going to help us, ever. But don't let facts get in the way of reality, because it ruins a good narrative. Don't let that happen. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. More on the education assault. This story blows my mind, but again, not surprising. Stick around. Right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day nearly 500,000 textile workers from Maine to Alabama walked off the job in a general strike. The United Textile Workers had launched an organizing campaign the year before. Within months, their membership had grown from 15,000 to well over 250,000. Working conditions and pay were abysmal. Normal work weeks averaged 55 hours. Child labor was widespread, and workers were always in fear of mill closings, pay cuts, and firings for suspected union activity. In the South, the industry had essentially been in a depression since the early 20s. The key issue was the stretch out. Workers were routinely expected to complete an increasing amount of work at the same rate and wage. For a brief moment, workers hoped their conditions would change when President Roosevelt signed the Code of Fair Competition the previous summer. It raised wages, limited hours, and prohibited child labor. It also allowed for union organizing. But the mill owners maneuvered around the code effectively, and the Textile Relations Board refused most workers' complaints. Fed up, workers walked out of the mill by the hundreds of thousands. They used the flying squadron tactic employed by Minneapolis Teamsters earlier that year, traveling from town to town, from mill to mill, calling workers out on strike. Mill owners were shocked. Within days, strikers confronted thousands of police and scabs. More than 40,000 National Guardsmen were called out in 16 states. Over the course of the strike, 16 people would be killed and hundreds more injured. After 22 days, union leaders called off the strike when President Roosevelt promised a government survey of industry conditions. It was an outrage, a betrayal, and a defeat felt for decades. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
The people are revolting, in the very best meaning of that word. An inspiring example of people rising up against a trifecta of economic, cultural, and political oppression has just come to us from a community of seemingly powerless people living in a very isolated place. Long exploited, lied to, disrespected, and robbed, they revolted, daring to take on the biggest, richest, most politically connected industrial power on the globe, Big Oil. Astonishingly, after a decade of protesting, organizing, coalition building, suing, petitioning, and otherwise resolutely rebelling against injustice, these tenacious people just won an inspiring grassroots victory over Big Oil profiteering. One reason you probably haven't heard about it is that it didn't happen in any of the usual centers of media focus, but in the Amazonian rainforest of Ecuador. Also, this revolt was not led by some brand-name environmental group or charismatic political honcho, but by the Tagere and Taromanani tribes and other indigenous Warani people living in the rich biodiversity of Ecuador's Yosemite National Park. Directly challenging the exigent crisis of climate change, the Warani rallied the region's young people into a potent political force. They successfully organized behind a national referendum to 1. Ban oil drilling in the region, 2. Compel the profiteers to remove their wells and pipelines, and 3. Pay for remediation and reforestation. Significantly, They specifically called for leaving oil in the ground so it would not add to climate destruction. And the proposed ban was binding, unable to be overturned by future lobbyists and officials. This is Jim Hightower saying, a resounding 58% of Ecuadorians said yes. As a Warani leader noted, this is the day the planet started to win.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as you know, there's a lot of labor activity going on around the country. And we've been talking about all of the strikes going on. You know, WabTech, they finally they agreed to a resolution there out in Erie, PA. You've got the strike going on with the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors. All this stuff going on. And on the education front, you're seeing lots of organizing. Our friends over at UE are organizing grad assistants and folks just at an incredible pace. But here in my backyard, the local community college, we've been following it for, it's been like 2 years they've been trying to organize, and they've been organizing. And finally, last April, they won. And it's time to start bargaining. It's time to start getting down to the nuts and bolts. And well, I don't think it's been going great. And that's why I've asked Kathy Sicker to come talk with us. Kathy's the president of the Harrisburg Area Community College Education Association. Their website, hackea.org. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Kathy, thanks for taking time for us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
So you guys have gone through what is a very long organizing process, as I remember. We'd had a bunch of people on over the last couple of years talking about the work that you guys have done. You won your election and you were moving forward. What's going on?
Right. So we unionized in April of 2022. So we are a new young union at Harrisburg Area Community College. We represent full-time, part-time, adjunct faculty. There's almost 900 faculty in our bargaining unit. And so do you want me to get into the story and why I'm here?
Just give me the point where you get to, we'll get to that. I just want to know about the organizing. What took to get here?
Yes. So I was not part of the organizers, but I supported it all along the way. And then the majority of the faculty voted in April of 2022. And so we are an official, legally recognized union in the state of Pennsylvania. And we are the last community college in Pennsylvania to unionize.
Wow. I didn't realize that you were the last. Now, you're recognized. You have the right to represent your members. Legally, yes. You're supposed to be where your members are. So on Wednesday, when two representatives of the union get arrested for being on campus, this is kind of a weird thing, isn't it?
It's just shocking. It's unbelievable.
Why were they arrested? Because I'm trying to read through the stories that have been there. In fact, I know one of the people who was arrested very well. I know she's not a troublemaker. I know she's a really nice person.
Right.
Why did they arrest these? I'm still trying to figure out why they were arrested.
It's the tale of two stories, and we at our local completely disagrees with the decision that HAC management made that day. You know, starting in July, myself and some other union members who are on the exec committee were starting to organize our membership drive that was starting at the beginning of the academic semester. And so we took about 5 weeks this summer to get organized with information about the local, you know, wanted to get the word out to the faculty about us. You know, since we organized over a year and a half ago, we took the last year, drafted our first contract, we're in negotiations, set up our committees, you know, organized our constitution and bylaws, got our feet, got settled. So, you know, we were going to kick off this academic year with a very large membership drive to get the word out to the faculty about their option to join the union, which is a voluntary option in this country.
Right.
So we had a successful membership event at York HAC last Tuesday, August 22nd. It's called our week zero. It's the week before the students come back to class. The faculty were on campus on Tuesday. We went through the proper protocol, got permission to put up a membership information table. You know, I had ordered custom tablecloths that say Hackie with our logo on it. I spent the weekends with my kids putting labels on brochures so we could hand out information to faculty as they came for the event. Over their lunch, they could come and get information. You know, we have reusable grocery bags, water bottles, stress balls, buttons. You know, you can come to the table, you can walk past the table, and you can ignore the table. It's just a table with information. And we are there to talk to you if you want to talk to us. So there were over 100 faculty in York last week, and it was very successful. There was a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. And so we were planning information tables at all the Hack campuses starting this week when the students come back. And I had organized faculty at Lancaster. They were union faculty, and faculty at Harrisburg. And I had done the table request for Lancaster for this Wednesday's table. And I had emailed the proper events coordinator person on the 21st, well over a week ahead of time. I was ignored, emailed again on the 24th, no reply, emailed another follow-up on the 28th, informing them, you know, we are putting our information table at Lancaster. I had already dropped the supplies off to my union faculty member at Lancaster the week before, you know, the tablecloth, all the swag, the merchandise to give out, and he had organized other local faculty Hack employees, faculty members to stand at the table. And then Hack's attorney spoke to our PSCA Uniserve on, I believe, the day before and said, your tables are not approved. You are an outside entity with a special interest, and you're not allowed on campus. And we were just blown away. Like, we're not an outside entity.
You're the faculty. How can you be an outside entity?
We're employees. We're the local recognized union at Harrisburg Area Community College. We had already done a successful event, which maybe was intimidating because it was so enthusiastic and energetic, and we were so happy with it. And that's what we are planning to continue to do. So our table request was denied, and we believe that we have every right to be standing at an information table on a college campus where there's a First Amendment right to free speech, and we're protected under Act 195 of Pennsylvania labor law. And when we were in New York, our PSCA reps, Adam Weber and Lori Lebo, the two that were arrested in Lancaster, were with us in New York as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, PSCA is our state organization. So we're the local, PSCA is our state, and then there's the NEA, which is our national. So we are one, basically. They represent us at the state and national level, and PSCA is our advocate. They help us through labor law. They've helped us set up the union. You know, I've never been a union president, so they've been very helpful to me and resourceful to all of us. And so Adam and Lori were at the Lancaster table with our faculty members assisting them, just that they were in York. And the Hack security was ready for us to tell us that we were not welcome to be there and asking us to leave. There's plenty of video out there. You can watch it for yourself on CBS 21 News. And we did not go to Lancaster expecting to be arrested.
Yeah, you went there expecting to talk to your members.
We expected to host an information table. And I had even had literature printed out, because I'm just blown away by this, because I had literature printed out for students in case students walked by, because I thought this is such a great educational experience about democracy and labor unions. You know, the bedstone of our democracy is a labor union and what it does for the employees to have a seat at the table and bargaining a collective. And they can, you know, students can join the PSC if they want. There's scholarships available. There's conferences for them to go to. So I was so excited that, you know, maybe some students would walk by and get some information about labor unions.
Well, they got some information, all right. And this, this could be one of those moments that this could be a massive organizing opportunity to look at the university as a union buster and hold them and begin holding them accountable. Because look, it shouldn't have to be like this. It should not be this adversarial.
No,
because you guys still have to sit down and hammer out an agreement.
We are negotiating, which has been very slow, and they are stalling. It has been extremely slow. We are negotiating our first contract, which is the most important contract, because it's the rock of our future at HAC. And we recognize that. And so anyway, at Lancaster, I don't know if you've watched the video footage.
I did.
HAC's head of security was there from Harrisburg, which is interesting because it was Lancaster campus. And that's what someone told me, that he is from Harrisburg.
No, they clearly wanted to pick a fight. This is clearly a message of them showing you that they're in control.
They made the choice to call the police on the faculty. And you can even hear in the video that the safety officer says that if the faculty don't leave the table, our union faculty, they will be arrested just like Adam Weber and Lori Lebo. So they were given an order. So they walked away, and our PSEA reps took the fall for us. They advocated for our faculty and said, we have a right to be here to give out information to faculty. And they said, we're not leaving. And then so HAC instructed the police to arrest them. And I think what's interesting about that is that in HAC's statement, they say that it was a political stunt on our behalf to get arrested. We didn't go there to be arrested.
Yeah. No,
we went there to host an information table.
Yeah, nobody wants that hassle. You wanted to talk to potential members. You wanted to talk to the student body. You wanted to promote what you're doing. I mean, that's what you're legally allowed to be doing. I mean, that's the part that gets me.
Right.
And I guess down the road, this will work itself out. But it just shows what employers, what lengths that they will go to deny workers their ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. And, you know, I look at you before we went on air. You said that, you know, your department, once you became union president, seemed to mysteriously go away.
I've been at HAC for 17 years. I was adjunct for 12. And I'm one of the founding members of the gerontology program. So it's the study of aging. And I've been full-time for the last 5 years. In October, I was called into a meeting very abruptly and told that we have three programs in gerontology. All three programs are being deactivated. And I was also informed that I was on my fifth year of tenure track, that my tenure was being denied, and I was given a two-year teach-out. And I was absolutely shocked. Of course, I took union reps with me to that meeting because I thought something was suspicious. And thankfully, I'm thankful that I did, because I didn't know what to do at that point. And they walked me through the process. The union fought for me. I did get my tenure given to me by the Board of Trustees in February. So I'm now a tenured professor.
Good for you.
And I am being reassigned to a new discipline because I have two master's degrees. I can teach in other disciplines. But the way this went about was just shocking. Shocking. I mean,
is it shocking, though, Kathy? I mean, you know, I got to tell you, I've heard these stories, you know, time and time again. The employer, it doesn't matter what the employer is. It doesn't matter if they're making widgets or educating college students. It's the same playbook. It's all about intimidation. It's all about imposing their power and their will, and whether you're going to stand up and fight back. And clearly your union is doing that. But for me, the message that comes out of this to the broader public is we need to have much stronger labor laws in this country. And we need politicians who are going to stand up to these employers, whether it is people making widgets or educating college students, because it shouldn't be this difficult to fight to get better wages, hours, and conditions.
Well, you know, you would expect an institute of higher learning to respect the ideals of the First Amendment and the freedom of speech in a public space. I mean, I guess maybe I was naive, but that's what shocks me the most. You know, we're here to teach students about our democracy And we just want a seat at the table. And I've been a school director for 8 years. I've been a school board president. So I've been on the other side of contract negotiations with teachers. But I can tell you that you can have a good relationship with the union. You can bargain a good contract and have excellent conversation and put the things in the contract that are good for both sides. I've seen that happen. And that's our goal at HAC, is we want to bring stability back to HAC. We want to have an equitable contract and a fair contract for our faculty. And we want them to listen to us, and we will listen to them as well. So that's all we're asking. Yeah. And continuing to slow the bargaining and stall, we're going to bargain a contract. So let's just do it.
Yeah. No. So last
let's
question.
Let's just get to the table and do it.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. How can we help? I mean, clearly, you know, the administration is going to, hopefully bow to some public pressure, because this doesn't look good on them. I've asked a couple of people, and they go, this does not look good on a college setting. What can people do to help?
Well, first of all, I would like HAC to apologize, drop the charges, and ensure that we can have membership tables at the campuses without the threat that our faculty union members will be arrested. And I would like them to come to the table and start bargaining. In our last negotiations meeting was the beginning of August, and our next one is not scheduled till September 22nd. That's not acceptable. We need to be meeting more often than that. So how can people help? I think we all want Harrisburg-Erie Community College to be the best community college we can possibly have, because it benefits our community, it benefits our employers, it benefits our students, it benefits their families. And we know that community colleges are very important for people to make college affordable. So I just wish people would pay attention to this story. You're welcome to have me back to talk, and I'll give you updates on what's going on. And I hope that this just isn't a 24-hour news story, that this is something that people really pay attention to, because some of the things that are coming out on behalf of HAC aren't true. So if people want to know the truth, you know, they can ask me, they can come to the union. We have nothing to hide. It's easy for me to talk about this because I'm talking about facts and I'm talking about the truth.
Well, I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on how things are progressing here, because, again, this is... sadly, what happens when workers stand up and demand their rights. But Kathy Sicker, I appreciate you taking some time for us. But by all means, please come back and keep us up to date.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Kathy's the president of the Harrisburg Area Community College Education Association. We'll get links out on social media. I can check out their website. And maybe there's a spot on there you can email, get some information, or maybe call the college president and you know, I don't know, something. I'm not going to say anything mean, but maybe something. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers and Iron Shipmakers of America was founded in Chicago. This joined two earlier boilermaker unions into one. They decided to establish their headquarters in Kansas City, Kansas. 2 years later, the Boilermakers affiliated with the American Federation of Labor. The union represents members of 250 lodges in the United States and Canada. At the turn of the 20th century, the Boilermakers had about 8,500 members. But their membership expanded, especially during World War II, as shipbuilding grew for the war. By 1944, there were more than 350,000 Boilermakers. In 1954, they merged with the International Brotherhood of Blacksmiths, Drop Forgers, and Helpers, and expanded their name to include these groups of workers. But what exactly is a Boilermaker? According to the union's website, the term can have many meanings.
It might refer to a Purdue University student or alumni whose football team started going by the name of the Boilermakers in 1891. Or Boilermaker might refer to dropping a shot of whiskey into a draft beer and drinking it all at once. But for the labor movement, a Boilermaker is someone that constructs and repairs boilers and the other workers who are part of the union. These might include blacksmiths, forgers, shipbuilders, cement workers, stove workers, metal polishers, and numerous other job descriptions. The Boilermaker's logo reflects these workers. It includes images of a ship, a worker working on a boiler, and a blacksmith's anvil. Below the images are found the words unity, progress, and protection, declaring the mission of the union and its members.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So you gotta love Florida, and you know, you look at this whole push for vouchers, and you know, in every state there's a movement to get these wonderful vouchers, you know, because, and this is where, you know, I don't blame parents. Because we all want our kids to get the best possible education. We all want them to do, you know, great things. I mean, I was thinking about it yesterday, you know, with my son. You know, I remember, you know, the day he was born going, you know, the promises every parent makes that we're going to, you know, everything that you're going to, every opportunity that I didn't have, you're going to get, and, you know, all that stuff. So I don't blame parents too much. But I look at these voucher schemes, and the story coming out of Florida right now is, evidently, you know, Florida, you know, made vouchers much, much easier to get. And what they found out is, you know, and what they're okay with is how parents are spending those education dollars. You know, theme park passes, 55-inch, you know, colored TVs, stand-up paddle boards, you know, all of these new ways of spending education dollars. Are you surprised that some people would take the money and fret it away? No. In fact, I believe that a lot of our Republican friends who push these kind of things want that. If we can squander as much education money as possible, we can say, look, it doesn't work. We need to privatize. And the frustrating part in this is it's working. The frustrating part in all of this is, in every state, just about, you've got these schemes that have popped up. And for every dollar that comes out of the public schools, and goes into these you know, silver bullet voucher schemes or charter schools or virtual cyber charter or whatever the latest gimmick is, that's money that's not going into your local public school. And that's part of the plan. Part of the plan is to starve. You know, it goes back to the Grover Norquist. You know, I want government so small I can drag it in the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub. But when I saw this story, I'm going, you know, it's not shocking to me. It's not surprising to me that this is what happens. And it's the reason that I'm dead set against the homeschooling movement. Now, as I've said a couple of times, you know, especially here this week, as the story broke at the Washington Post, that you've got this attorney who for decades has been working to promote homeschooling and you know, tax dollars going into that. Because there's a way to, well, one, kill off public education, but two, and more importantly, enrich their followers and ultimately themselves. Because sadly, Education Incorporated is all about making money. Your kids don't matter in that. And that's the frustrating part. You know, I know a lot of public school teachers, and it's about the kids. In these private settings, it's about the dollars and cents. And the perfect place to look at this is the university setting. All of these for-profit colleges that have popped up to where it's all about keeping you in school. You know, when I went to college, you had to fight to stay in. You had to attain a grade to be able to stay in. Now, you know, I have a friend who's a college professor who says, you know, I can't fail someone.
because the university needs that person, that butt in that seat. If we fail people, it's bad for us. And we're all adjuncts, so we don't have the kind of security that would give us the ability to reclaim the profession. That model, that for-profit university model, and it's not just the gimmicky ones that you see on 3 o'clock.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.